Welcome to the Future of Everything podcast with world-renowned futurist and best-selling author, Nick Webb. In this episode, Nick will share the big future trends that are impacting your organization in the areas of innovation, emerging technologies, leadership, and the rapidly changing workplace. Get ready to see the future. Ladies and gentlemen, Nick Webb.
Hi, this is Nick Webb, and welcome to another episode of The Nick Webb Show. I'm really excited about this episode. I have a new book coming out in summer 2024 that I believe will be the ultimate playbook for leaders, managers, CEOs, entrepreneurs, and anyone that wants to navigate the hyper-complexity of chaotic change. The book is entitled Chaotic Change, and I'll be talking about it over the next several episodes. The great thing about this program is that when you buy the book or pre-order the book, you'll also be able to get a free masterclass training program to give you a primer on everything you need to know to navigate hyper-complexity, hyper-competition, hyper-consumerism, and, well, hyper-everything. Now, let's talk for a minute about this book and this new range of podcast episodes. Imagine, if you will, you're driving down a mountain road. The road is pitch dark. It's midnight. There are no streetlights. All you see is the glow from your instruments and a little bit ahead of you from your headlights. As you're approaching a turn at 50 miles an hour, all of a sudden, without warning, your headlights turn off. What do? You stop. You stop. Unfortunately, the overwhelming majority of executives and leaders and managers believe that the lights have been turned off and the future is therefore uncertain. So what do? They stop. It's not true that the future is uncertain. The overwhelming majority of everything in the future we know about. Now, it's hard to predict global pandemics and economic collapse, for sure. But the truth of the matter is, virtually everything within our charge is predictable. If you take a look at a grandmaster chess player, some suggest that they're 12 moves ahead in their head. They're literally looking at 12 moves ahead. So the key to being a grandmaster in chess? Being several turns ahead in the dark, windy road. Some suggest that Elon Musk is 8 to 12 moves ahead on the future. It seems to be true. The point that I'm making here is that uncertainty and the belief in the urban legend of uncertainty for you is lethal. If you want to succeed and you want to be future ready and you want to avoid being blindsided by competition, if you want to attract and keep mission-critical talent, if you want to lead like a rock star, you really need to understand chaotic change and what to do about it. Now, in the book, I break it down into several areas, starting with the trajectory of change. Remember, we have transitioned from a time 40 or 50 years ago of incremental innovation. That's back when I was developing technologies in healthcare. It was really easy to be an innovator. And as a result of that, I was awarded over 40 patents for breakthrough technologies. Sounds impressive, but the truth of the matter is, back then, being an innovator was pretty easy. Then we transitioned to the scariness of disruptive innovation. And I like to describe disruptive innovation as a trajectory. It was a trajectory of acceleration and size. We went from smallness and we went from slow speed to high speed and bigness. And disruption continues today. The change and the nature of change is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The speed is accelerating at an unbelievable rate. So in other words, we're moving towards warp factor 9 into chaotic change. Now, chaotic change is really interesting because you have to look at the causality of chaotic change. It's really enabled through emerging technologies like artificial intelligence and ultimately the way in which we will leverage supercomputing in order to accelerate AI. It's also accelerated through connection architecture, societal changes, a changing workforce, a changing perspective of work, a change in the value of things, and the way in which consumers see the value, and the way in which business-to-business clients see the value in things. We will ultimately transition back to and from a state of transactionalism into a state of experiential design. We'll talk more about that. So in the book Chaotic Change, I begin by really squaring up with what's happening, why it's happening, and why you need to care about it. And remember, try to avoid this urban legend, this mirage that the future is uncertain, because when we do that, we allow ourselves to stop. And stopping at a time of hyper-acceleration is like a super, super bad idea. Let's not do that. All right, well, let's start with some of the chapters, and I'll just give you an introduction into some of the chapters within the book. One of the chapters is talking about the importance of lucid leadership, and a lot of this came from my research from my best-selling book, Lucid Leadership. In that chapter, I try to set my reader up for success. And I do that by talking about what it really requires to what's required today if we really want to manage in a time of hypercomplexity. What's really required? And it turns out that we need to be much better as leaders. It doesn't matter where we lead within an enterprise or if we're an entrepreneur or business owner. We have to know our marketscape far better than we ever have before. Now, you'll notice that I'm using, once again, the term marketscape and not marketplace. When I think of marketscape, I think of the entire landscape of the market, which means not just the competitive landscape and not just market trends. It also really has to include understanding the impact of AI, the impact of other emerging technologies, the impact of likely disruptive innovators, the impact of innovation speed and size, the impact of everything outside your red brick building. We have to understand the entire marketscape, not just the marketplace. We have to become experts at really understanding not just our current state, but what are the likely changes that are going to happen within our industry so that we can be future ready to build an innovation pipeline to create the newness in a time of differentness. Understanding your marketscape is the fundamental, critical component of lucid leadership. You know, it's interesting to me when I read leadership books and listen to leadership speakers, I'm always surprised that they talk about style and communication, and they really focus on, you know, the distribution of leadership and servant leadership and all these methods, and much of that stuff's great. But the problem is that, look, if your team doesn't think you know what you're doing, if they don't think you understand the marketplace, they're not going to respect you. But more importantly, I have to say that it's sort of like sailing. I used to really be an avid sailor earlier in my life, and one of the things that everybody on that sailboat has to believe is that the smartest person, the person that really knows the weather and understands the ocean and understands the boat, is at the tiller. They need to know that the smartest person is at the tiller. And so it's really important for you to be respected by your team, and you're not going to be respected if you're not the marketscape expert. Moreover, you can't direct your team without marketscape expertise. You can't build world-class, fresh, actionable strategies that deliver good returns on your enterprise without being the marketscape expert. What I suggest in my book, Lucid Leadership, and I'll drill down on in Chaotic Change, is that if we want to be good at this, if we want to have a place in the sun, we have to be able to understand everything, not just the traditional things that we looked at before, like marketplace and looking at things like competitive analysis and other market trends. That's important. We have to know that stuff for sure, but there's so much more to it. In a time of chaotic change, our entire industry could be made irrelevant in an afternoon. Now, I wish I had more time because I could literally spend an hour talking about how technology has destroyed so many industries. We could talk about how AI is set to destroy so many more. The good news is that if we understand the marketscape, and this is really good news, then we can actually thrive and prosper. I think that's beautiful. But we do have to make the commitment to lucid leadership. Now, there are three components to being a great leader in a time of chaotic change. First is understanding the marketscape beyond the marketplace. The second is understanding your culture. You are operating a people-powered industry and a people-powered enterprise and a people-powered department. Everything that your organization will do will be powered by the people that show up every day to serve your mission. That's a fact. The best leaders understand the temperature and the ether of their culture. Do your employees love what they do? Do they believe in your mission? Is their work part of their own personal evolution? Because if it's not, you will lose them. Or they will continue to take a paycheck. This is the concept of quiet quitting, but they really will not be providing you much in the way of productivity and yield. That's not good, because in a time of rapid change, we need maximal productivity, but we also need these people to innovate for us. And innovation requires a culture of happiness. In fact, I'm going to say some things in this audio program today that may sound controversial, shocking, or maybe not relevant, but it is. And here's one recommendation I'm going to make. If your organization does not have a happiness strategy, leveraging the superpower of human experience innovation, you will ultimately struggle and possibly fail in the marketplace. You're operating a people-powered enterprise. In order to power the people, they have to be happy. They also will never deliver great experiences for your customers if they're not happy. They won't innovate if they're not happy. You will have very, very low levels of employee presenteeism. In other words, their head will not be in the game. If you want to win at this, and it's worth winning at, you have to realize that in order to achieve a culture of happiness, to achieve the culture that allows you to transition through this time of chaotic change, you have to have employees that love their work. Their work has to be more than just meaningful. It has to be part of their own personal evolution. It has to be more than just meaningful. It has to be happy. It has to be more than just meaningful. They want to create the connective tissue between the uniqueness of who they are and what your organization does. They want to see progress, and they want to see acknowledgement that they are part of the velocity of this meaningful mission. They want to know they're doing good. They want to know that they are prospering, and they want to know that they're positively impacting other people. Here's a question for you. Do you have an employee happiness strategy? What we call HAAS, happiness as a strategy. The best organizations in the world are now hiring chief happiness officers. I just completed a training program for the Mayo Clinic in order to help their employees reach a state of happiness and joy. Why did that organization choose to train 70,000 employees on the concept of happiness? It's simple. They're a great organization that understands that they are in the people business. They deliver value to patients, and they deliver the value through other humans. Without a happiness strategy, you'll never nail this. Okay, understanding your culture and understanding the way in which you impact it is the second dynamic of lucid leadership. Lastly, this is one we all struggle with, I guess, at some point. Lastly, is self-awareness. Self-awareness is interesting. In my work, in my consulting practice, we find that many leaders have an impression that they know more than they know. And look, I mean, I give them a pass because they're running complicated, in, you know, businesses. I mean, these organizations are incredibly complicated. So it's hard for them to really know where they are in terms of the competency curve. But we really have to have a sense of self-awareness in several areas. How do I impact people emotionally? Do people respect me and trust me? How do I present myself? Am I humble and thoughtful? Am I a good listener? Do I believe in the mission in a way that makes it clear that my employees and teams see that? Self-awareness is hard, but it's the superpower of the best leaders in the world. Okay, so there you go. If you want to champion change, you have to become a lucid leader. Becoming a lucid leader requires three things. Number one, you need to go beyond the outdated idea of just understanding your market and really become a true expert on your marketscape. In other words, everything outside your building. Number two is you need to understand everything inside your building. In other words, you need lucidity, clarity on your enterprise culture. You really need to be able to develop formal systems, tools, processes, happiness hackathons, innovation methods, and all the stuff that we know works with mathematical certainty so that you have a culture of happiness. The benefits to the organization and to the leader are just unbelievable. And here's the good news. There are systems, tools, processes that are absolutely proven to deliver a culture of happiness. Unfortunately, most organizations never institutionalize a formal approach towards this body of work. Lastly, if you want to lead in a time of chaotic change, you need self-awareness. You need to understand where your limitations are, and you need to fill competency and skill gaps. You need to understand the way in which you emotionally and humanistically connect to everybody. You need to make sure that you're constantly communicating your mission that matters so that your stakeholders want to follow. Clarity, lucidity is the key to successful leadership in 2024. And beyond. Okay, now let's start talking about some of the other chapters inside this upcoming book. Another chapter or two, I talk about how to become an innovation superstar. Is it possible for you, I mean you, not your company, you, to be an innovation superstar? And the answer is absolutely. I think what's interesting about this is that the overwhelming majority of individuals believe that innovators are anointed with some special gift, and they're not. Look, I have 40 patents for technologies, including one of the world's smallest medical implants, one of the first wearable technologies, and a whole range of consumer and B2B technologies. I would love to make you believe that there's something special about me, but there isn't. One thing I do know is the process of becoming an innovation superstar. Here's some stuff that you should consider as you think about how you're going to invent your way through chaotic change, because that is so critical. You have to invent your way through chaotic innovation. What does that mean? Well, it means that we have to invent before somebody else. And if somebody else does invent before us in our market, a competitor, then we have to be able to create a response to that innovation by adding layered and dynamic value. So what does it mean to be an innovator? Number one, and these are the tricks that I've learned over 40 years as an inventor, also writing multiple number one best-selling books on the topic, and I've also created and launched several centers for innovation for companies and universities. So here's what I've learned. Number one, the key to being really, really good at innovation, this is a dirty little secret that very few people know, is simply active observation. Really? You mean I can just be conscious and observe? Yeah, that's it. The number one trick for being an amazing innovator is constantly asking yourself, how can I do that better? I was at a craft show yesterday with my wife. I reinvented 90% of the businesses there. And if I were inclined to go into that market, I would have been a disruptive innovator. So when you look at ways to be able to add layered, meaning a lot more value than what's currently provided at the same cost, and dynamic value, value that gets better all the time, when you become an active observer and ask yourself in your self-talk that question, how can I do this better? How can I out-invent my competition? How can I create better delivery systems and better packaging and better processes? Remember, the innovation isn't about the bright, shiny object always. It's the integrated net value to your end customer. Now, remember, the definition for innovation, from my perspective, is that innovation is the process of creating novel value that serves your organization and your customer. Innovation is the process of creating new stuff that's more valuable, that's better for your company, and better for the customers you serve. Those are the four pillars. Now, when you think about the term value, value is a gradient, right? There's disruptive value. There's breakthrough value. There's landmark value. There's incremental value. All of those are valuable. So when you're thinking about how you can out-invent the competition, all you have to do is be an active observer of ways to create novel, in other words, new value that serves your organization and your customer. Now, why do I say that serves your organization? You could create great value by opening up a car dealership that provided free cars to everyone. But that would not be a sustainable model because it's not serving your enterprise. There has to be equilibrium between the way in which it serves your enterprise and the way in which it serves your customer. We create new value at the same cost or lower cost through thinking and through ideation. So that's one thing that'll be very critical as you transition into this time of chaotic change. Now, remember, and I may not have brought this up enough at the beginning of this podcast, is that the change that we are going to see in the next 5 years will be unrecognizable marketplaces. 5 years from now, the marketplace in virtually every industrial vertical will be so different and so changed that in many cases, they will either be completely gone or they will be unrecognizable. You can stop and wait for the next shoe to drop, or you can be an author of innovation by understanding the principles of how to become an innovation superstar, not just as a company, not just as an enterprise, but you as the leader, you as the CEO, manager, you as the entrepreneur, you can become an innovation superstar. In the book, I show you how to build out innovation pipelines. I talk about how to be able to do this stuff through collaborative ideation, how to leverage ESNs. There's all kinds of great stuff in the book that will show you how to accomplish innovation superstardom. And yes, it's worth it. It's worth the time investment to develop these skills. Because without them, failure is guaranteed. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about what's in the book. We also talk about the superpower of enterprise innovation. This is such an exciting area. You know, the best innovations that will be coming out over the next 5 years will not be new, bright, shiny objects necessarily, although there will be many of those. It'll also be new delivery modalities. Uber didn't reinvent the taxi. They reinvented the way in which people contacted a way to get from one place to the other. It was a way in which they provided aggregation of movement. They didn't reinvent the car. They reinvented the aggregation and the hyper-influential rating of movement. So again, completely and totally disruptive, and I can give you so many examples of this. We need to be enterprise innovators, where we reimagine the way in which we deliver value to our customer, ways in which we reduce cost, the way in which we create innovations through collaborative ideation with our entire teams, especially those that are facing customers. Enterprise innovation is about how to be really, really good and how to be hard to kill. That's what we really want to do with enterprise innovation. Our costs are optimized. Our value is optimized. Our enterprise is happy. Our customers are happy. We are profitable. We are growing with scalability. All of those things are completely and totally enabled by enterprise innovation. We just did a project in our consulting practice for organization in Los Angeles that proved out to provide ultimately $40 million in value in perpetuity at a zero net cost to the client. This stuff is real. When you take a look at other people like Cisco and others who have used these methods, you can see great examples of tens of millions of dollars return on time and effort investment. Enterprise innovation is a set of systems and tools and processes, in some cases, even technology packages. But generally speaking, it's a philosophy that we're going to continue the value through collaborative ideation with our team members. But you do need to create what we call an innovation pipeline. And that is a way in which you evaluate the feasibility of new ideas and the way in which you rapidly move new ideas forward. I don't want to sound dramatic, but if you're not constantly accelerating your rate of innovation, then you are falling behind. Because trust me, I work with some of the top brands in the world. Everybody is looking to increase the velocity of innovation. And it doesn't matter if you're a muffler shop on the corner or if you're a multi-international brand, you got to be able to accelerate your rate of innovation. Okay, let's go through another interesting area here that is so important to your ability to win. I was very honored to have been awarded one of the top global gurus for 9 years in a row, one of the top 30 experts in the world for 9 years in a row, for my work with my two best-selling books, What Customers Crave and What Customers Hate. And I think it's really important to realize that the expectation of customers, whether they're consumer customers or business customers, have continued to go up. We call it the baseline level of customer expectation. Our customers tomorrow expect more than they did yesterday. That's a fact. If your organization isn't building out really, really thoughtful customer experience strategies that are using new methods, you know, historically we've used things like market demography to build out customer personas. And that never works. If we don't understand our customers, we're going to fail. The other gigantic mistake is we get suckered into the survey industrial complex using one of the standard methods to determine our promoter scores and other methods like that. And they are really, in my humble opinion, useless. I believe that there's a lot heavier lifting that needs to be done if we want to understand our true customer sentiments. I don't really think it's that important to know how likely a customer is to promote us. I think from the perspective of fixing things, we need to get down to the grassroots and understand what our customers hate about us. And is it a legitimate hate? And is it fixable? And if it is, why aren't we fixing it? I mean, I run into this all the time in my consulting practice. We see people doing all kinds of things that we call customer punitive systems, tools, and processes that punish their customer. It's incredible. It's incredible. Just the other day, I went to cancel my cable service because it's a disaster. It was unpredictable. And the box that they ship to you to run your cable on your TV was constantly glitching. I was paying $160 a month. So I called him and said, hey, you want to come and fix it? Yeah, but we're going to charge you. Wait, you're going to charge me to come out here and fix this? Yeah, we're not going to take care of the problem that is the result of our equipment and our technology. You're going to have to pay for it. So what did I do? I unplugged my cable. I went to an alternative service that works through the wireless server, and voila. Much, much, much better options, much better movie access, much better everything. Oh yeah, and it was half the money. It's incredible that we are able to add, but we're not able to subtract. The cable company could add what they would charge me, but they forgot to subtract losing somebody who had been a customer of theirs for 18 years, paying twice as much as they should have been paying. That seems like easy math to me. but we tend to do that. We tend to have customer punitive policies that are deeply entrenched within our enterprise culture that really seem to be the kinds of policies that people would have that hate their customers. And what customers hate, I talk about the 10 things that every organization needs to stop doing immediately if they want to thrive in a time of chaotic change. Dust off your current CX strategy. Check the current baseline level of customer expectation when compared to the competitive landscape. Build a next generation strategy that is built on ideation and collaboration and real consumer insights. Forget the surveys, they're a joke. You need better insights based on what we now call hate-love personas so that we can use those insights not just to create a graph on a spreadsheet. We're going to use those insights to instantly transmute those into customer-delighting innovations. Customer experience has changed considerably. There's a new body of work. There's a new sheriff in town. Follow this new approach, and the impact of scalable and predictable growth will blow your mind. When you really think about it in simple terms, there are four quadrants of revenue, something I talked about previously. The first quadrant is money that comes in because we advertise. And that's where most organizations spend 90% of their budget. The second quadrant are customers that have decided to stay with us, customer retention. That can represent as much as 60% or more of our revenue. Then there are customer promoters. These are customers that recommend us to others. I find that in certain industries, good organizations achieve 90% of revenue growth through customer referrals. And then lastly is what we call digital deflection. And these deflectors are bad reviews where people search us, they see our ratings, and they deflect away from us. We make the mistake of putting all of our time, effort, and budget into marketing, and we spend virtually no time in doing what is necessary to build out strategies, to drive retention, to drive promotion, and to avoid deflection. That's a problem. The good news is it's fixable, but it's definitely not fixable from getting insights from the survey industrial complex, and it's certainly not fixable without doing next generation methods. Okay, and I talk about this in chaotic change. How do we do this stuff, and why is it so important right now? Okay, the other thing is, and we've got a lot to cover in these podcasts, so I won't try to cover everything in this particular longer podcast, but I'll also kind of round out the book talking about staffing. One of the big challenges that we're going to have, really are having in most industries, and some industries like healthcare, it's already catastrophic, is our ability to attract and retain mission-critical talent. But even more than that, our ability to have better returns on human capital, our ability to be able to increase productivity, presenteeism, which increases productivity, it increases safety, it increases quality, it increases innovation. So all of that stuff is really, really, really important. And so what I recommend in chaotic change is that we look at the superpower of human experience innovation. Now, again, human experience innovation is where we take customer experience design and we apply that to human experience design for the employees and stakeholders within our organization. Here's the dirty little secret. You really can never have great customer experience without having great employee experience. And if you don't have great customer experience, you fail in the market today. If you don't have great employee experience, you don't attract mission-critical talent and you fail. I know this sounds like hyperbole, but it's true. If you don't have the ability to attract great customers and retain them and attract and retain great employees, you don't have a business. And this is a big part of the warfare that will be happening as a result of chaotic change. Companies are going to take your talent away from you. And if they're not happy, then they will in fact leave. Innovators and disruptive innovators that are creating layered and dynamic value with new technologies, products, and services, they're going to take your customer. If you haven't built out a next generation CX strategy, you will fail. Again, I usually don't like to talk about negative things like failing and bankruptcy. I really don't. But this is life and death stuff here. The rate of acceleration and change is epic. It's astonishing. The biggest mistake we'll make as leaders and CEOs is to ignore it or to believe our future is uncertain. Look, I hope you stay tuned to this podcast by subscribing to the podcast. We have some really great podcasts that'll be coming up over the next several weeks. Essentially, these are mini masterclasses, and the idea is to prompt ideas for you. Like, you know what? Nick said something that really makes sense. We do need to be more programmatic about the way in which we attract and retain employees and customers. Nick pointed out some great tips about how we can be innovation superstars, and it's possible for us to do that. Remember, when we think about innovation superstars, remember that it's possible and it's necessary. So that's good news. It's necessary, but it's possible. And I know it does require a little bit of learning and it does require the adoption of new skills, but it's really, really worth it. As I get into the summer months closer or the spring, late spring, we're going to also include some guests that we'll be talking to get their amazing insights on these various chapters within the book, Chaotic Change. So I hope you get a chance to tune in. I'm going to try to not drone on as long in my future podcast. I've made a commitment to try to keep them at about 15 minutes. The reason this one is a little longer is I wanted to give you a sense of what is involved. Now, here's a special offer that is, I think, really exciting. If you go to my website, my speaking website, nickwebb.com, there'll be a banner somewhere that you can click. And if you pre-order the book or order the book on Amazon, you will get access to a complete masterclass that will give you the power to out-invent your competitors and to ensure your relevancy as we transition through the acceleration of chaotic change. So just go to the Nick website and sign up to either buy a book on Amazon or to pre-order a book on Amazon, and then you will get a passcode. There's also some opportunities if you provide an honest rating, not asking for a five-star rating, just an honest review. Once the book does start shipping, if you could provide an honest review, send me a snapshot of the review. We'll also send you some additional information for taking the time to review my book. Again, I'm not asking you to do anything that is inappropriate by giving me a review that's not accurate. We want your honest-to-goodness review. But once we get your review, even if it's a bad review, then I will make certain to provide you some additional value. Listen, I love the fact that I'm having impact on so many people right now. I hope that this has given you some positive insights. My podcasts come from a place of love, and this is something I do because I really want to share ideas with folks to help them get better. I want to do good, and I want to be able to contribute. Those are my goals for my life, and I hope that this delivers on that goal. Thanks again for listening to my show. Until next time.
You have been listening to the Future of Everything podcast with best-selling author and keynote speaker, Nick Webb. To continue getting hard-hitting, powerful insights, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. To learn more about Nick's consulting or speaking services, please visit Nick's website at nickwebb.com.